Sure is. With our special guest tonight, Dr. Larry Dossey, incredible work and the power of premonitions. Larry, I checked during the break, and I think I had John Peterson on with me 6 years ago.
Yeah?
6 years ago.
Yeah, well, he's been a busy boy, and he's one of the most courageous people I know about looking at the potential to make premonitions practical. I mean, he just really is way out there.
Well, I hope this works for him, and we'll give it as much support as need be. I think it's a great, great idea.
Actually, it could be something that's really important in the national interest. You know, because, George, a lot of the premonitions that have been set down in history have to do with, just as an example, assassinations. There's a section in my book on whether or not history would have been different if people had taken premonitions of assassinations of national leaders seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, didn't Gene Dixon tell John F. Kennedy, don't go to Dallas?
Yeah, that's on the record. That's right. I guess the most famous one in American history is Abraham Lincoln's own vision in a dream of his own death.
He saw himself or someone like him in the White House in a casket, didn't he?
Yes, that's right. And he even, in the dream, went up to one of the guards at this where the casket was and asked him who's in the casket. And he said, the president. And even this wasn't enough to make him take it seriously. Actually, he told his wife about it, and she thought it was just so ghastly and ghoulish, she refused to even hear it. So, you know, there was a lot of dancing around this premonition in the White House, and long story short, Lincoln himself denied it, and the rest is history.
I guess, and again, we get back to they're in denial. There's something, there's a barrier they put up that just does not allow them to accept this.
Well, that's true, and I think I understand why we do that today a lot more clearly than I do about Lincoln's time. I mean, we have become so dragooned and brainwashed against thinking that these things are possible that it makes it fairly easy for people just to step back and say, well, everybody knows that these things can't happen, so it must be just pure fantasy or hallucinations. I just despise this everybody knows argument because it's just downright wrong. It's particularly wrong where academicians are concerned. I recently looked at a survey of college professors and university professors. And they were asked, do you believe that ESP has either been proven or is likely to be possible? And 55%, more than half, of so-called natural scientists, such as biologists and physicists and so on, said yes. They believe it's either actually proven or likely to be true. And when you get up to professors in the arts and humanities, 75% of college professors say that this stuff really happens or has actually been proved to happen already. So the old argument that everybody knows that this stuff can't happen is just false. And it's time that we just took the bull by the horns and just resisted the skeptics who just claim that this stuff is just a woo-woo New Age fantasy.
Let's talk then about the work, The Power of Premonitions. Why'd you really decide to write it?
Because I thought it was time for a new dialogue. I felt that we now are beyond telling stories of people's experiences, as valuable and as colorful as that is. But we now have a new story to tell because science has entered the scene. I've already mentioned the presentiment experiments, over 20 around the world, that have been replicated and by various people after being pioneered by Dr. Dean Radin, whom I'm pretty sure has been on your program before.
Yes.
Also, there's another category of solid proof I should mention. It is related to the field of remote viewing. I imagine many of your listeners know about remote
viewing. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Thing that makes it relevant to premonitions is that the people involved in remote viewing who are sent images by a distant person, the people who are on the receiving end of these images receive the information up to a week before it's even sent. This has caused the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Lab to actually put precognitive in front of remote viewing. They refer to their hundreds of experiments as precognitive remote viewing. This is premonition evidence. This is solid evidence in these hundreds of studies that people can acquire information before it happens. So this is displacement in time, and it belongs as one of the major categories of evidence favoring premonitions.
Most people will say premonitions are tied into unpleasant things, which leads me to conclude that the body or the human psyche or the spirit, whatever is doing this, has created this as a mechanism for safety.
I think that that is a very conservative and very safe and very accurate way to judge this. This explains the survival aspect, explains the unpleasant nature of so many of these things. I must say, though, that it's not always like that. I have one case that involves a woman in upstate New York who got into trouble with her personal finances, and so she actually prayed that she would win the lottery, not for very much money, but just enough to liquidate her debts, which were very modest. And she saw the winning numbers in a dream, and so she acted on this premonitory dream and entered these numbers that came to her, and she won just enough to liquidate her debts.
That's all you really need then, isn't it?
Well, and here's another thing. She got into a problem years later with a leaky roof. She prayed that she would win the lottery just enough to fix her roof. The same thing repeated itself. She saw the winning lottery number. She entered them, and she won just enough to repair her roof. So I love this little story because, you know, skeptics say, well, you know, if this stuff works, why don't people win the lottery? Well, occasionally they do, not once in this case, but twice. And it also shows the way that modesty and asking with purity of purpose can facilitate these sorts of things. In the book, I go into several studies where people try to use premonitions to make money in the silver futures market. And they were successful in every case when they tried to limit their winnings to a modest amount and to use purity of purpose in this to finance research, or in one instance to finance a Waldorf school. But then when they tried to double down and break the bank and really go for broke and just accumulate a lot of money for personal gain, and when greed entered in, these experiments using premonitions to make money in the market failed totally.
Yes.
And this is something that you have talked about on your program,
yes.
I know. It's the destructive power of greed. And I can tell you in the experience on premonitions, greed is the enemy of accuracy and premonition. They do not go together at all.
Got a friend, he works at a Greek restaurant here, and now he's somewhat retired, living down in Palm Springs area. His name's George Poulos, and good old George, great Greek guy. Was listening to the show one day when we had the numbers lady, Glynis McCants, on, who said that if you use the number 8, whether it's typed, written, printed, and just put it in your pocket, your wallet, your purse, whatever, it's going to bring you some riches. And it has consequences, I think, tied to it in some respect. So he did this, Larry, and he goes down to a casino down that way and starts playing. He plays slots and stuff, and I guess he won $2,500. He had the 8 in his pocket. Well, he came back, went to his house, and he decided, you know what? I want to go back again. So the next day, he goes back. And all of a sudden, what was inquisitive turned into greed. He wanted more. And he lost it all and then put more back. So there's something to that story about, you know, this push for more, or,
right,
you know, it'll give you just enough.
Yeah.
I had another guy who sent me an email. He said, George, I wanted a lot of money. I needed it. So I did the same thing. I put an 8 in my wallet, and I, you know what? I got $250,000 from my dad. And he said the bad news was it was an inheritance. He died.
Oh, my.
So it had consequences attached to it, too.
Yeah. Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. What's going on around the world with regards to work into premonitions?
There have been studies that have been replicated in laboratories, particularly in the presentiment area in Western Europe and in the UK, looking at the things that Dr. Dean Radin pioneered. So there really is widespread interest in this, and you know, this is one of the most important features of good science, whether or not separate investigators working in different laboratories can replicate something. And so with respect to the presentiment studies in the premonitions field, the answer is decidedly yes. Actually, there's one other category of evidence favoring premonitions I should mention, and this is the online approach looking at premonition tests, which people can take on their own PCs, and this has become a worldwide effort. These studies were pioneered by the Boundary Institute and Dr. Radin once again, who, you know, I keep mentioning his name, but he's just one of the Einsteins in this field.
Oh, he is. He's a giant. Giant.
He is a giant. And he's inspired people all over the world, really, to replicate his presentiment studies. But his online studies are available at a website called gotpsi.org. That's gotpsi.org. And what has happened in the last 5 years since these studies have been on the Internet, there have been millions of trials that have originated from practically every country on Earth. People love these tests because it lets you take them, and then later on you can take them again and you compare whether or not you've developed any skills in the intervening period and judge whether your psiability is getting better or worse and so on. Well, the cumulative database now in the millions of trials shows that something really important is going on with respect to premonitions. People from all over the world have demonstrated that they do have statistically significant premonition sense. The odds against chance in these premonition studies is tens of millions against one. In other words, just to say that these positive results for premonitions happen according to chance just won't cut it. And so this is a huge contribution. The database has been accumulated by participants from all over the world. So what we're talking about here is evidence for premonitions that has truly gone global.
Now, if we can learn to have premonitions, can actually learn them and cultivate them, are there some tips here for us? What do you concentrate? You know, I've always said, you know, just meditate, you know, be positive about things. It comes to you.
You and I are on the same same wavelength here, George, about this meditation business. Dr. Radin now has correlated success in these online premonition tests with different behaviors and personalities and disciplines that people have in their lives. And by far, the behavior that correlates most decisively with success in premonitions is whether or not somebody has a meditation practice. And the thinking is that in order to notice premonitions in the first place, it's necessary to sit down, shut up, clear your mind, and pay attention to what's going on in your inner life. Otherwise, you likely won't notice premonitions that are valid, even though you may have them. In the same sense that people claim that they never dream, they forget their dreams in waking, and so they just simply don't notice a premonition in a dream if it were to happen. People need to develop a way of stilling the mind so that these awarenesses float to conscious levels. And meditation is something about meditation that makes this happen. There's nothing that even comes close in terms of developing people into premonition prodigies, if you will. That's the best way to do it.
It sure is. It absolutely is. Businessmen should use it. People at home should use it. I mean, it should be just part of your everyday living, I think.
Well, I couldn't agree more. There is one other little behavior that a lot of people talk about who get really good at premonitions, and that's keeping a dream diary.
Tell me about that.
Well, a lot of people, as I mentioned, claim that they don't have premonitions. They don't even have dreams to begin with, and they just simply forget them. Others know they dream, but they lose them in the course of waking. And so to guard against that, the dream diary really comes in handy where you take it to bed with you. So the second you wake up, you just jot something down that helps you keep track of this so that you have a way of knowing if a dream did turn out to be valid or not. Over a period of time, people get really sensitized to distinguishing valid premonitory dreams from those that are not valid. And they get really good at this. People learn what they feel like and what they look like. And the dream diary really helps people along in this way.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's really low tech. It's not fancy.
Because if you don't do it, you're not going to remember.
No. When the clutter sets in, you know, there it goes. And the dream diary is just really a handy, low-tech, very effective way to guard against losing your premonitory dreams.
What would you like us to take away from the power of premonitions if we read it?
Well,
when we read it.
Yeah, the idea that I go with about the larger lesson here is that although these things can, you know, save our skins by helping us survive risk of various sorts and disasters and health problems, if we're warned about them, there's something more decisive about this. I think that these are a great gift, but they tell us who we are. They point like an arrow to some aspect of consciousness that's infinite in space and time, and therefore, I think, immortal and eternal. I think premonitions are telling us that we have some immortal quality of who we are, whether we call that the soul or something else. I think this gives great comfort to people who have been brought up in this modern age to think that it's all over with the death of the brain and body. I think premonitions are telling us something different. They're pointing toward immortality. They're pointing toward eternality. And they're also pointing to a connectivity, a unity between all consciousnesses. Because if something about us is beyond space and time, then it cannot be bounded. It cannot be put in a box and walled off from all the other consciousnesses out there. So in some sense, we come together and form what our ancestors used to call the universal mind. So I think premonitions are telling us that we're united as a species at some mental level, and that, in effect, we are, in some sense, eternal and immortal. To me, that's the greatest gift that premonitions confer on humans.
I think so, too. What's the youngest recorded person with premonitions that you might be aware of, a kid?
Well, I've got stories from parents whose lives, they say, were saved by premonitions by their three-year-olds and four-year-olds.
That's wonderful, isn't it? It is really remarkable.
Yeah, I think kids get into this because they don't know these things cannot happen, George.
No, they think it's normal, part of their every day-to-day life.
That's it, yeah.
We're going to take next half hour what we call fast blast questions. People can send me messages, and I'll relay the questions to you. And the next hour, we'll take actual phone calls for you, Larry.
Great.
Now, those of you who are brand new to the brand new coasttocoastam.com website and you're looking for the fast blast way, just go up to the website, coasttocoastam.com. Up there in the left-hand corner, you will see just a little link that says Fast Blast. And Lex is going to change that eventually. It's going to be bigger and more prominent. On the old website, it had the eyes of Sigmund Freud right there. But just go up there 15 minutes before, 15 minutes after the show. You can get up there and send your email and start Fast Blasting us. So that's what we're going to do next. Fast Blast questions for Dr. Larry Dossey, author of The Power of Premonitions. Well, next hour, we'll take your questions on premonitions, maybe your stories as well, with Dr. Larry Dossey. When we come back, though, we'll take your fast blast questions on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Dr. Larry Dossey. Larry, Scott from Oklahoma writes, is deja vu considered a form of premonition? That's interesting.
I consider deja vu sort of premonitions in reverse. You know, deja vu is the sense that, you know, you've done this before. You're linked up with a prior experience. Premonitions really work in the other direction. They are an intuition about what's to come and what has not yet happened.
The deja vu that I normally get is strange because you just know that you've been here, you know what they're going to say, but it's so unpredictable, and sometimes it doesn't happen for years for me. It seems to have slowed down as I've gotten older. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Mark?
It's an interesting phenomenon, but I think that, you know, they both talk about things that are relativized with respect to time. One seems to point in one direction and the other in the other.
Mark in San Diego, California. I've been noticing many people around me have been feeling that something doesn't feel right. Something big is about to happen in the world around us. Is that perhaps a premonition or intuition?
Well, I think so. You know, there's no way that we can know with 100% certainty that what we experience is a gut feeling or a vibe or a sense or even a hunch is going to turn out to be true or not. So I don't think that ought to be a reason for despair just because we don't have a way of knowing for sure. You know, not many things in life are knowable with 100% clarity. So I think it's just part of the equation we just have to live with. But there are rules of thumb, if I might interject here, about which hunches or vibes or intuitions we should consider seriously and which maybe not to. If something really seems absolutely realer than real, you know, the word that a lot of psychologists use to describe this is the word numinous. It's sort of lit up with meaning. If it's hyper-real, if we have that sense, then we ought to pay attention to it. And also, if the intuition deals with life and death, George, as we've talked about in many of these instances, you know, it's best to listen up, because if it does deal with a death issue, then you don't pay attention, you may not have a second chance. The other thing is that if these things are recurrent, if they just keep hammering away at us, you know, the intuition comes hour after hour, day after day, or if the dream comes back and pesters us night after night, we ought to listen up to that. And also, another clue is that if somebody else shares the intuition or the dream that we're having, if it involves husband and wife, for example, as some of these things do, that's really a clue that we ought to pay attention to it. So although we can't know with 100% certainty which ones to pay attention to and which ones are going to turn out to be valid, nonetheless, there are these rules of thumb that can help guide us.
Well, that's where Lisa's question from L.A. comes in, which is very similar. How do you know the difference between just a dream and a premonition in a dream?
Well, I sort of use those interchangeably, actually. I suppose she wants to know if these are just ordinary dreams that have no future
meaning,
significance whatsoever.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, again, I would use those rules of thumb of the vividness of the dream, whether or not it's recurrent, whether it's shared by other people, and actually the content, again, if it involves issues of health or life and death, I would truly listen up.
Amber from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Where do premonitions come from? Are they messages from a higher power, or is it just part of the information in our collective unconsciousness?
Well, I love the approach that's taken by the Jungian school of psychology, which places the origin of these deep in the collective unconscious. That's as far as I care to go with it. I have no way of knowing if these come from the other side or whether or not they're of divine origin. Indeed, they might be. I'll leave that up to other people. But I think we're very safe in placing these in the deep collective unconscious, as the Jungians taught us.
Carlos from Miami, Florida, wants to know about dream catchers, if you know anything about them, and how they deal with premonitions, positive or negative effects.
Well, I have one.
All right.
I live in a part of the world where dream catchers are extremely popular.
Explain that, by the way.
Northern New Mexico. And so a dream catcher is an object that supposedly has the power to capture dreams. Some people think that we imbue the object itself, the dream catcher, with our own intentions, so that the dream catcher actually is sort of a surrogate. It's sort of a go-between between the dream itself and our own intentions. But I love objects like that because they can really personalize and externalize what we're really trying to do.
Olivia, Vancouver, Washington, mass consciousness, prayer. These are elements that may affect current-day politics and our economy. What do you think of that?
Well, I know of I'm a huge fan of prayer, having written three books on the subject with respect to its importance in medicine. I actually cannot think of an area of cultural concern that should be off base to prayer. Certainly, there's compelling evidence in controlled clinical trials in medicine that shows that our intentions can indeed change the world with respect to health outcomes. I see no reason why these effects should be limited to physical outcomes with respect to the body. I'm much in favor of praying for anything that captures our attentions in which we want to direct the outcome in one way or another. And I certainly would include in this elements in our body politic.
Now, Beth has an interesting, observation from Knoxville, Tennessee. She says, I have premonitions, but I don't give them much attention because the future is always changing. I'm not sure about that. I think you can change the future, yeah. Can't you?
Yeah, I think so. You know, this gets to a debate that's really contentious, which exerts a lot of enthusiasm on both sides. There are people out there, including academics, that say that if you see the future, well, that's the future. You can't change it. So there's no free will involved here. I just don't go there. If you look at some of the actual stories that people tell, it's clear, it seems to me, that people do actually change the glimpsed future. You know, this case that we discussed earlier of Amanda, who took the baby out of the bed before the...
Great story.
Before the chandelier fell and crushed the bed the baby was sleeping in, it seems clearly that Amanda did glimpse the future, saw possibilities, and acted to change what she saw. Now, if you ask scholars whether you can change the future, you may get one answer, it may be no. But if you ask people who really live through these things, like Amanda, they will say, well, of course I can change the future. I just did. I saved my infant's life. Why are you even considering this a valid question? I love the idea that is forwarded by some workers in the field, including some physicists, that the future is probabilistic. That means it's fuzzy. It could go in either direction. There's a probable future, you know, that may be the one you glimpse in your premonition, but that doesn't mean it's fixed. If something is probable, that means that it could go in either direction. It's fuzzy. It's not written in stone. And perhaps by using premonitions and then using those as a nudge to our intentions toward a preferred future, we may be able to shift those possibilities and probabilities in a more benign direction.
Good point. Okay, next up, who do we have? We have Nelson. Review again. How do you know when you're having a premonition? And he's in Washington.
Yeah, I think we've covered that. Numinosity, the vividness of it, whether or not it's shared by other people, whether or not it's recurrent or not, whether it deals with issues of life and death or health and illness or rules of thumb.
All right. Paul from Burke, Virginia. What's the connection between premonition and deja vu? Again, it's pretty similar, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Deja vu usually is a sense that, you know, you're having an experience that you've had before. Premonitions are a hunch about things to come that have not yet happened. So they're both outside of time. Both are sort of timeless experiences, but they seem to you know, the vectors seem to go in different directions in each case.
Now, you just said something interesting, too. You said hunch. So how do you equate hunch with any of this?
You know, I think there are a bunch of colloquialisms that have arisen over the years that sort of pretty much mean the same thing. Intuition, hunch, vibes, gut feelings. I can't separate those, George, from premonitions. So I just think people ought to settle on a phrase that they're comfortable with and not really spend too much time trying to find the perfect term for these things.
What do you think of the possibilities, Larry, that premonitions, intuition, may be the help of your guardian angel, for example?
Well, I have several stories from people who are convinced that that's the case. And I just simply have to accept those in good faith. You know, people, very serious people whose credibility I can't question, have premonitions that they believe are mediated from higher beings. And that's fine with me. You know, I believe in non-local mind, infinite mind, mind that's connected at all levels of consciousness between everyone who has ever lived or shall live. So if I can go there, George, I can certainly make a place in my pantheon for angels.
What is the link again to the Arlington Institute?
ArlingtonInstitute.org.
ArlingtonInstitute.org. Great. And we'll have Lex put a link up like that on the show tonight.
Great.
Just so we can do that. Was there another one, too, that you gave?
I mentioned Dean Radin's online parapsychological premonition test.
Gotsi.org. Okay. How'd you spell that?
G-O-T-P-S-I.
All right.
Org.
There you go. Trent in Renton, Washington, you spelled it with a Y. It's G-O-T-P-S-I.org. There he goes.
Yeah.
Now we're going to make him a happy camper.
Great.
Joyce from Manitoba. I used to experience deja vu gut feelings, but not so much anymore. I've gotten older. Why?
Well, there may be several reasons. You know, we mentioned earlier that children have these things all the time because they haven't learned that they can't happen. I think a lot of us get sort of worn down by the messages in the culture that this stuff is just sort of woo-woo and we shouldn't trust it to begin with. That may drive a lot of it underground for some people. But I wouldn't be too critical on yourself. Was it Joyce? Joyce, because what happens to a lot of people is that they stop having these graphic camera-like premonitions, and they become so subtle that they retreat into the unconscious and they function off stage from awareness. It may be that your premonitions have not deserted you at all. Actually, this is a personal issue with me. As I mentioned earlier in the program, I had some humdingers way back there when I first started practicing medicine. And then I stopped, and I first thought that my premonition sense had dried up. I don't believe that anymore. I think it just resorted to the unconscious. And as a matter of fact, I think that unconscious premonitions may be some of the most effective kind of all. You know, they're not these eye-popping kind, you know, that
right.
All lit up in camera-like detail, but they may be more effective because we don't have to reason through them. We don't have to intellectualize about them and blunt them as a result of trying to figure them out. So I'm not sure that your premonition senses have deserted you. It may be that they even are now more effective by virtue of the fact that they may have become unconscious.
Caesar from San Francisco. Is it possible premonitions are merely chemical reactions in the brain?
I think premonitions are undoubtedly accompanied by chemical reactions in the brain. As a matter of fact, I don't know any sort of cognition that isn't accompanied by some kind of chemical action in the brain. But that doesn't mean that premonitions are caused by biochemical fluxes or anatomical tricks in the brain. I just don't believe that. I don't think there's any evidence for it. The reason I say that is that brains can't function outside of space and time. They seem to be confined to the cranium and to the present moment. They don't go wandering into the future and come back with information the way premonitions do. So from the get-go, I would just say that premonitions have an ability to display themselves non-locally, infinitely in space and time, in a way that brains just are incapable of doing.
John from Lacey, Washington, and this is for you. Thank you for having such an informed and distinguished guest on your show. As a Vietnam veteran myself, I can appreciate Dr. Dossie's a perspective on life. So there you go.
Well, you know, you just got to admire judgment like that, George.
Sky, Chicago, Illinois. I know that. I have a vivid dream, and the next day I see or experience something in the dream. What do you make of this? So she has the dream and then experience it the next day. It's premonition, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what we've been talking about. Yeah, you know, many premonitions. That's just a dead ringer for many of the stories that I talk about in the book.
Mankind is not good. Bad things will happen. That's from a listener in Texas. Doesn't want to give his or her name.
Well, I'll just take that as her statement.
When you have a dream that seems like it's a premonition, nope, that's not going to go anywhere. What does it mean? I don't know. What does it mean? I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, well, back to us, you and me. And we'll take live calls next hour as well. Tell me a little bit about Blink, The Power of Thinking Without Thinking. This your work in Malcolm Gladwell's work similar?
Yeah, they are similar. I think that Malcolm Gladwell and I sort of tread some of the same territory. I really loved his book. I was really attracted to a lot of the examples that he gave in which, for example, firemen can leave a burning building in the blink of an eye, making these sorts of decisions on the basis of no information whatsoever, and therefore save their life. And this ability, you know, to respond without thinking is how the book got its name, Blink. I was sort of stunned when I read the book, though, because I thought Malcolm had written a book about premonitions without realizing it. I mean, if you look in the index, premonitions doesn't even pop up in the index. I don't know why this is. Also absent from the book in analyzing these dead ringers for premonitions is the total absence of any of the scientific evidence, such as the presentiment experiments and all of the precognitive remote viewing data. It doesn't even mention the online premonition tests that we've been talking about. So I think that, you know, Malcolm goes right up to the edge and just doesn't want to step over the boundary and acknowledge that, you know, he's talking about premonitions.
Right, absolutely. What's the big message you want us to take away with premonitions?
That premonitions are a huge gift, that they can save our skin if we permit them to, that if we open ourselves up to them, they are much more likely to occur in our lives. There are ways of simply inviting them and making them more likely to occur. But the big message is that they point like an arrow to some sort of timeless, outside of time aspect of who we are. Therefore, they are a harbinger, in my judgment, for the soul, for some timeless, eternal, infinite aspect of who we are. And in this sense, they give us even more a gift than being a tool to avoid unpleasant things.
And what an incredible tool to be able to use.
Well, I think so. And I think, as Carl Jung, the great psychiatrist, put it, we ought to get down on our knees every day and give gratitude for what the universe has given us. And certainly one of the great gifts of the universe in the psychological dimension is this power for premonition.
Stay with us. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with your phone calls and Larry Dossie on Coast to Coast.